Blog Talk Radio.
Only six states to cut off benefits before 26 of unemployment. Federal dollars had kicked in once state cuts off benefits, which meant Florida residents could receive up to 39 weeks. But Florida's maximum benefit is also lower than other states at $275 a week. What a crippling, crooked, miserable state. Meanwhile, Florida workers were out of work for an average of 44 weeks in 2011 and 2012, and the longest period in the nation. Incomplete data from the last year point to an even longer duration in 2013. The Sun Sentinel reported the expiration caused 73,000 unemployed Floridians to lose their benefits immediately, and if they are not extended soon, another 260,400 people in Florida will be hurt. Rubio is not the only senator to hail from a state of disproportionately impacted by the unemployment debate. Many of the Republicans who voted against Bill happen to represent states with the highest unemployment rates in the nation. Senator Mark Kirk, Republican from Illinois, Thad Cochran, and Roger Wicker, Republicans from Missouri, Mississippi?
Mm-hmm.
Mississippi. Mitch McConnell, a Republican from Kentucky, and Lamar Alexander and Rob Corker, Republicans from Tennessee, all voted to despite representing states with unemployment over 8%. Thanks to six Republicans joining Democratic senators to advance the extension, it will still move on to the next vote without Rubio's help. What a miserable, flaming prick this guy must be. Huh?
Yeah.
What a miserable piece of work this guy must be. Deny his people. Oh, God. I mean, it's really. And yet they voted him a senator? I mean, if the people do that in Florida,
hard
they deserve
believe,
the worst bastard that can possibly be. You know, they deserve it. So, you know, stick it up your where you know, Mr. Florida.
But if you remember, Florida was a state with the hanging chad, so who knows?
Yeah, but Florida is crazy, man. It's a crazy state, you know, and it's so, it's been ruled by Republicans for years, and it's been purged, it's been manipulated, jury-rigged and everything.
So
and,
who knows
but, you know, it's up to the Floridian people, and they're all retired, sick, and crazy or something, or dementia, I don't know, to allow a guy like Rubio to be a senator.
How about this one? People who expect you to pick up the tab. In restaurants and other industries where workers earn the tip minimum wage, that's $2.13 an hour, employers expect the customer to pay their employees. The average worker living off the tip minimum wage is three times more likely to live in poverty and only make $8 an hour after tips, sometimes less. It's time we raise the tipped minimum wage, which hasn't budged since 1991. Have you ever lived off tips? Are you currently a tip worker? You can go on this site and share your living off tips story.
You can go to the video if you want.
Yeah, let's see what the video has to say. It's buffering, folks. It takes a few minutes here.
Time that it was my brother's
birthday one day, 1 year,
and
I
can't give
a
plug because
I
have to choose between a white girl or a birthday present.
Federal wage is
$2.13
an hour, and
the
state of Texas
is
$2.13 an hour.
My check is $50. People living on tips are suffering.
$2.13 an hour, that's ridiculous.
I mean, it's criminal. I mean, the restaurant lobby in this country is absolutely, you know, overwhelmingly powerful, and to be able to deprive people of a living wage is just insane. It's insane. It really is insane. You don't have to do it. This is a past that.
Well, I have it now, so.
Where is it?
Right here. Living off the tips is a challenge.
Living off the tips is difficult because you never know what your wage is going to be.
$2.13 plus tips
And you don't even give me the tips as an employer. Like, the customer gives me that. Waiters are not paid by the employer. They are paid by the customer. Employer expects the customer to pay their employees.
And I realized that it's just too hard, and it's been too long, and we have to change something.
I think that we all deserve respect. That's our career. That's how we make our money.
Anyway, since we are living off tips, join us and share our stories. So, you know, if you're in a restaurant, guys, tip your tip to poor people.
I didn't realize they made so little. I didn't know.
I knew that now for a number of years, but I didn't, you know, years ago. So, can you shut the music off there? All right. Anyway, I've got so many problems with this, with these issues, so many issues with these.
And we have to.
No more of those.
It was Tom's my brother's birthday one day.
Sorry about that.
Can you get rid of that? Thank you.
I'm trying.
No more tipsters. Okay. And anyway, we got.
People suffer a lot.
People are suffering a lot. And it's really sad. I'm hoping that this picture comes up here. This is an interesting one. Imagine, if you will, a president, you know, they got, I don't know if you remember Twilight Zone.
Oh, sure.
But Rod Serling used to say, stand up in front of you and said, imagine, if you will, a president who orders the collection of virtually every fact about American citizens, yet has all of his own records sealed by court order for running for president.
Uh-huh.
All right, folks. Obama is a fraud. I hope you understand that. I hope you understand that. I hope you understand that.
Well, I don't think people really.
He's a fraud. He's an incredible fraud. All right? And, you know, he's killing this country.
Like the mafia used to say, he's a made man.
He's a made man. He's killing this country. And, you know, but not just him. You got people like this Rubio guy and people like all these other criminals that are in that office, those offices. And they just
you have to understand that they're well paid, though.
Oh, of course, you know, and they're exempt from Obamacare, you know. So it's like, but you know, when you start to see it, when you look at it for what it is, folks, that's really downright sick, you know. And you're getting screwed.
And here's an article: so much for the right wing arguments against paid sick leave. In 2011, Connecticut became the first state to require employers to provide paid sick days for workers, including part-time employees. At that time, extreme pro-business interests in the state ran through the common, yet tired arguments about paid sick leave in efforts to stop the law from passing. After 18 months of the law being in effect, researchers Eileen Applebaum of the Center for Economic and Policy Research and Ruth Milkman, a professor at SUNY, that's the College of New York, surveyed more than 250 employers in the state to determine the effects of the law. The results of the study pretty soundly reject the conservative argument against paid sick leave. Teresa Krugner said of the study, "The office found that the law had minimal effects on businesses. A large majority of employers reported that the law did not affect the business operations and that they had no or only a small increase in costs. Businesses most frequently covered absent workers by assigning the work to other employees, a solution which has little effects on costs. Just 10% of employers reported that the law caused their costs to increase by 3% or more. The key findings of the study include employee turnover was reduced by 3.3%. Sick employees coming to work was reduced by over 18%. Illness was spread 14.8% less often than before the law. Productivity increased by 14.9%. Morale, excuse me, motivation and loyalty increased among employees. Payroll costs increased by 3% or more for only 10% of employers. Only 10.6% of employers reported reducing employee hours because of the law. Only 15.6% of employers reported increasing prices because of the law. Only 3.4% of employers reported reducing operating hours because of the law. Only 1.3% of employers reported reduced quality of service because of the law. And only 1% of employers reported reducing wages because of the law. A strong majority of employers were very supportive, over 39%, of the law a year and a half after it went into effect. The law covers about 400,000 workers. The law had minimal impact on employers that had already offered paid sick days. Little abuse of the system has been reported. Paid sick day coverage increased from 88.5% of employers to over 93%. The number of paid sick days offered to all employees rose from an average of 6.9 days to 7.7 days. About two-thirds of eligible workers used paid sick days, with an average of 4 days used per year. Unionized employers were half as likely to report cost increases because of the law. That really shot down all of the right-wing arguments.
Sure.
People don't abuse it. They only use it when they're sick and can't come into work.
Yeah, here's something really interesting. New York Times, which I never try to quote, but on this particular article, they might have something. It says, not getting their money's worth. At first glance, two recent crises to hit the White House, the revelations about unlawful surveillance and the blotched health care rollout, have nothing in common, but each is a reminder of the increasing extent to which government work has been contracted out to private sector companies. Currently, Washington spends about $500 billion a year on private sector contracts, more than twice the amount in 2000. It is hard to argue that Americans are getting their money's worth. The ostensible purpose of using private contractors is to get jobs done cheaper and better. But that aim is often unmet. Companies bidding for federal work have a financial incentive to overpromise. The complex procurement process gives big companies an edge to win large, long-term contracts, even when the needed expertise, especially in technology, can often be found at smaller, more nimble companies. Federal rules intended to reduce conflict of interest instead leave government officials with little authority to oversee or terminate contracts. The result is delays, overruns, and unmet public needs. Technological failures are not the only problem. A recent Senate report found that federal contractors are among the worst violators of wage and safety laws, while a New York Times investigation found that the government buys clothes from sweatshops in foreign countries. It is legitimate to use contractors when the government does not possess the expertise, especially on specific projects, or for services that are tangential. Thank you. I don't know what that means, but tangential to core government functions. But the current practice of contracting out vast swaths of government work indefinitely with little or no attempt to develop the needed technical or managerial experience within the government or to enforce labor standards has created a bloated federal contractor sector in which the public good is often subservient to profit. And several sensible proposals to reform federal contracting have been put forward, including bipartisan legislation to make a single person at each government agency responsible for technology projects. Some good government groups have suggested that government and analysts systematically evaluate whether contractors provide better value than federal employees and what it would take to develop in-house expertise. Well, legislators and some labor advocates say President Obama should require government agencies to consider company labor and performance record when awarding contracts. Well, I totally agree with that. But for all the research and recommendation, nothing much is happening in Congress or the administration, in part because the status quo is lucrative for powerful corporations and big campaign donors and is entrenched by the revolving door between government agencies and private sector contractors. Reform will not be simple, simply a technical exercise. It also will be a political battle, one that no one has taken up in earnest yet. So it's kind of interesting, folks. We're getting screwed.
Yep.
We're just getting screwed, blue and tattooed, no matter how you look at it.
A real movement of the 99% don't look down. Huh. This is by William Spriggs. From 1946 to the 1970s, the incomes of Americans grew together. This, of course, does not mean everyone earned the same amount, but it did mean that if the economy grew, everyone's income grew. The patent allowed President John F. Kennedy to note in a 1963 speech that a rising tide lifts all boats. Since the 1970s, this has not been the case. A rising tide has lifted those at the top 1%, sunk those at the bottom, and left the rest adrift in a rough sea. President Kennedy used this speech to defend a project some felt was pork barrel politics. Today, the claim that a growing economy benefits everyone is used to defend tax cuts to corporations that send American jobs overseas and shift their profits to tax haven countries. And the top 1%, like corporate CEOs who direct their corporations to borrow money to pay back the company's stock to boost the CEO's bonus for rising stock prices and their personal wealth and stock holdings. Recent headlines have been dominated by congressional Republican-led cuts to the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program and unemployment insurance to long-term unemployed workers. Republicans believe this is a winning strategy because the path to the weird politics of their rise has been to convince those in the middle that is the top, that it is the 20% at the bottom versus the 80% at the top. They have been reinforced by a prevailing notion that the growth in income inequality is the result of skill differences, with those industries with those industrious, pardon me, I don't know why I said industries, that doesn't make sense, with those industrious enough to study hard and get a good education being rewarded and those too lazy to study being outpaced by advanced technology. But the Great Recession affected highly educated and less educated workers, and the failure of young people to gain a foothold in the current job market makes clear that the explanation of the world is not true. It certainly does not explain why the real growth in inequality is between 99% and the 1. But some warn that embracing a populist message over the things like SNAP, extended unemployment benefits, and the minimum wage is a turnoff to the middle class. There is a lingering fear that Republicans are right. The middle class doesn't want to join a movement of the 99% and would rather cast its lot against the bottom 20%. But if policies are going to truly benefit the 99%, it is precisely the bottom 20% who matter. A major reason the 1946 to 1970 era was marked by more equal growth is because we lifted the bottom, boosting and expanding coverage of Social Security benefits, expanding the share of workers covered by unemployment insurance and the minimum wage, and having the minimum wage keep pace with overall wage and productivity growth. The rising tide was not that we aimed at tax cuts for the wealthy, but pushed up the level of the economy at the bottom. A recent article in the Bureau of Labor Statistics Monthly Labor Review highlights the 24% of American families with children who receive some form of means-tested public assistance like SNAP, Medicaid, and public housing. 80% of those households include at least one worker. The expenditures of these families exceeds their income, meaning every dime of assistance gets pumped back into the economy. Nearly 80% of their spending goes just for food, housing, and transportation, so they are much less likely to own a car or a house. Because family sizes are about equal between those getting assistance and those who don't, the fact that families on assistance spend half of what families not on assistance spend means there are huge differences between the experiences of American children in those families. Most notably, their families buy a third less food and have less than half to spend on education and books. The middle has to care about the bottom because it represents how far a society will let someone fall. The current high level of unemployment hurts those with jobs because the cost of losing a job is set so high it dampens demands for better wages and benefits. A higher floor means a better bargaining position. Republicans want the middle to believe that they're better off if they are further from the bottom. A true movement of the 99% needs the middle to understand that you aren't rising because those around you are falling, but you are falling if the ceiling is rising.
Okay. Well, these GOPers tried to kill the benefits bill and see the unemployment rates in their states. I thought this was kind of interesting. It's from Mother Jones. But, you know, if you...
Didn't you just read us that?
No.
Who they are? No. Who voted against it? You?
I only read a couple. No. Actually, this one is the Senate unexpectedly moved forward
this is the Senate.
On extending a much-needed unemployment insurance for the 1.3 million Americans who lost benefits shortly after Christmas. Imagine that. On Tuesday morning, the extension cleared an early filibuster by 60-37 vote, with six Republicans joining the Democrats in voting the advancement. The Emergency Unemployment Compensation Extension Act, introduced by Jack Reed, a Democrat from Rhode Island, extends benefits for the long-term unemployed for only 3 months. But 37 Republicans still voted to block debate on the bill.
Really?
Yeah. Some of those Republicans who blocked the bill, states with the highest unemployment rates. We've talked about that previously, but Senator Dean Heller, Republican from Nevada, the bill's Republican co-sponsor and one of the few GOPers to vote for the move, the bill towards final passage in the Senate, comes from a state with the worst unemployment
rate. Oh,
they
have high unemployment
rate. Yeah, 9% in Nevada. It's no surprise that he might vote for the extended benefits to those Americans who have been out of a job for 6 months or more. But that doesn't explain the no votes from Republican Senator Mark Kirk from Illinois, which was the fourth worst unemployment rate, 8.7%, and then two Republican senators from Mississippi, which had an unemployment rate of 8.3%. And Republicans have cited the high cost of the bill as a reason they don't want to extend emergency benefits, although they've done so repeatedly in the past.
Hmm.
Now, here's a dimwit, is Senator Kelly Ayotte from New Hampshire, Dan Coats, a Republican from New Hampshire, Susan Collins from Maine, joined Heller as the only Republicans to vote for cloture. All right. So what will happen now? The bill still has a long way to go before it passes the Senate. Some of the Republicans who voted for cloture on Tuesday might still join another filibuster against the final vote. Portman, for example, wants to proceed to debate, but is demanding that the cost be offset by Democrats hope to win his vote next time. And even if the extension clears the Senate, it will likely flounder in the Republican-controlled House. In the meantime, as America continues to face the worst long-term unemployment crisis since the Great Depression, families who have been using the recession-era emergency benefit to scrape by will now fall even deeper into the poverty well. And last year, unemployment benefits helped lift 1.7 million people, including 446,000 children, out of poverty, according to the National Unemployment Law Project. As one New Yorker who had lost her benefits told Mother Jones, "I'm thoroughly petrified." Yeah. And here is a list of every Republican who voted against the bill or abstained, as well as the unemployment rates in their states, based on the most recent data released by the Data Department. No Democrat voted against the bill, and it has been backed by the White House. So that's good to know. Of course, here's John McCain voted against it. He said almost 8%. Jeff Flake, that's a good name, Republican Arizona. Bob Corker, Republican of Tennessee. Lamar Alexander, Republican Tennessee. Rand Paul, wow, he voted against it, huh? Rand Paul, 8.2. Mitch McConnell, 8.2% unemployment. Roger Wicker, from Mississippi. Thad Cochran, Mississippi. Mark Kirk, Illinois. Lindsey Graham, of course.
Patrick Toomey from Pennsylvania, they have high unemployment there. You wrote it again?
I know, he's a Republican.
Mm-hmm.
Tim Scott, Republican, from South Carolina. Mark Rubio from Florida. Ron Johnson, Wisconsin. These are all Republicans. Mm-hmm. Not one Democrat voted against that bill. Tim Scott from South Carolina. Mark Rubio, Ron Johnson. A Republican from Wisconsin, Dave Vitter, Republican from Louisiana, Jeff Sessions.
Okay.
Man, all these bastards. I mean, there's 30 or 40 bastards. Okay. Let's see, Tom Coburn, James Reich from Idaho, Jeff Inhofe from Oklahoma, Jerry Moran from Kansas, Pat Roberts is only 4 or 5 more, John Barrasso, a Republican from Wyoming, Michael Enzi, Republican from Wyoming, they only got 4.4 unemployment. So, Chuck Grassley, 4.4, Orrin Hatch, 4.3 from Utah, Mike Lee, Republican Utah, Debbie Fisher from Nebraska, and Mike Johans from Nebraska.
Well, they have low unemployment.
Very low, yeah. And North Dakota, 2.6%, John. But they're all Republicans. Every single one of them are Republicans.
We need to raise the minimum wage because $15,000 a year is not enough to live on.
Yeah,
it's,
for sure.
Let's see what this guy has to say.
Yes, for sure.
Where is the middle class gone?
We're more productive, but we take home less money.
For all the hours we've worked, we're just not seeing it in our paychecks.
Yet our cost of food, housing, clothing, transportation, and health care just keep getting more expensive.
Meanwhile, all the income gains of the last 15 years went to the richest 10% of Americans.
And the minimum wage? Stagnant. Workers are trying to squeeze by on only $15,000 a year.
This inequality simply weakens our economy and prevents our middle class from growing.
It hurts our families.
It's unsustainable.
It's time to close the gap.
Raising the minimum wage is the right place to start.
Okay. We agree with that fully, 100%. It's something interesting. I thought was interesting. It came up today, and it claims that countries with indefinite detention. Hitler's Germany, Stalin's Russia, China, North Korea, Myanmar, Cuba, and the United States of America. What do you think of that?
Makes me feel bad.
The NDAA is a bill that was passed by Congress over the holidays that gives the government, and Obama signed, It gives the government the right to indefinitely detain American citizens without charge. This completely violates our Bill of Rights. We need a president that will protect our rights, not destroy them. All right? And absolutely amazing. And the policy of the American people is to leave their citizens free, neither restraining nor aiding them in their punishment and their pursuits. That's what Thomas Jefferson put. You know, it's really, really amazing what's happened under Obama. Really.
And was there a ripple of anything in Congress or in the news or anything?
Not a thing. Nobody cares. Nobody cares. Nobody wants to know. Nobody knows. I mean, it's just a total wipeout, you know? And it's just amazing, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. I mean, you know, you have to find this stuff from different blogs and different things. I mean, it's just, you know, and then we try to bring it to you on our show. And
others try to bring it to you.
Other people try, but I haven't heard it anywhere else, you know. It's just, you know, it's just a sick situation. And, you know, we're trying, folks, but, boy, we're taking in water, man. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we've been trying for a long time. It's just hard. There's so many wing nuts and butt kissers and, you know,
and here's
miserable bastards out
there. Here's some more audio on why Social Security shouldn't be cut, because they'll be talking about cutting that.
Of course, that's why they're trying. 870,000 more reasons we shouldn't cut Social Security benefits.
Hi, my name is Kira. I'm 34 years old, and I live in North Carolina. As you can see, I use a power wheelchair because I happen to live with cerebral palsy. I love my life for the most part. I need SSDI in order to have a livelihood just like every other human being on this earth. And the income that I receive from my job is only $400 a month, and that does not even cover half of my expenses. What happens at the end of the month is I don't have a lot of extra money and I still need food. I have to pinch my pennies. I usually end up buying oodles of noodles for the rest of the month just so that I can eat. And that doesn't just happen for me. It happens for a lot of people.
Oh, okay. Kara has received a dental bill for $800. Medicare does not cover it.
Even if she empties
it. I'm very uncertain about my future financially because my current job will be over in May. I don't exactly know what I'm going to do after that, because that means that $400 that helps pay for my expenses will not be there if I don't find some other employment. My parents taught me as a young child that I had the right to be independent, and I had the right to get a job as a person with a disability. And I had the right to speak up for what is right for people with disabilities. And I'm so proud of that. I'm sorry for getting so emotional. I have a closing thought that I would like to leave you with, and that would be that my life is full of love and happiness. But it is also very difficult at times. When lawmakers are thinking about whether to cut SSDI benefits, I would like them to picture my face and to think about my not being able to have a life outside of my apartment.
Yeah. Over 370,000 disabled adult children like Kara rely on modest Social Security benefits. These benefits are based on their parents' work history. And any reduction in Social Security would jeopardize Kira's ability to live independently and contribute to her community. It's very sick. You know, it's sad.
Oh,
you know, it's
God.
Really sad what people have to go through, you know.
The poor woman, what she has to go through.
But it's not just her. I mean, it's so
I mean, that's
many,
what she said. It's not just me.
There's
many
so
other
many people.
People
that are so hurting, so hurting. And I don't know. That's why we do this show, folks. We try to bring this stuff out to people and let them know what's going on. There's some more stuff here that to get off the. There's one more thing. There's one more. Oh yeah, this is kind of interesting. This thing with Idaho, I thought it was good news.
What's that?
It was hang on a second. Where Idaho took back its prisons from prison system from a private to public, made it public again because of the
abuse.
Well, yeah, they found it was very, very it was ridiculous and very expensive. We were using these private contractors, and they were so bad, you know. So that was interesting. If I can find it again here, suddenly I like.
Oh, here's something.
What?
Do you remember the clothing factory fire in Bangladesh?
Yeah.
The owners of the Bangladesh sweatshop garment factory where 112 workers were killed in a fire last year have been charged with homicide. Bloomberg News reports that Delwar Hussain and his wife, owners of the Tazarine Fashion Limited and the company's engineer, won 13 people charged under two sections of law, including homicide. The Tazarine Fashion Factory, which manufactured clothing for Walmart and Sears, went up in flames last November. Some managers allegedly ordered employees to keep working through the alarms, trapping them as the fire worsened. A year after the fire, the survivors, many of whom jumped from windows of the eight-story building, recently told the AFL-CIO Solidarity Center in Dhaka, the Bangladesh capital, how their injuries and lack of assistance or compensation left them unable to provide for their families. Oh, boy.
Anyway, some good news, actually, based on bad news, but good news, in Idaho. Idaho to take back control of privately run state prison. The state will take over.
I have an audio piece to play on that. Do you want me to play this?
No. How long is it?
Not very long, I don't
think. You don't know. It could be forever.
We'll play a little piece on it. Oh, sorry, she's not speaking English.
Yeah, let's stop that.
Yeah. That's not going to help us very much.
No,
sorry.
No, I don't want to translate it. I can't. So anyway, let me continue here. Idaho to take back control of privately run state prisons. The state will take over from Corrections Corporation of America. CCA prisons have been subject to multiple lawsuits since 1997. The Idaho governor says the corrections department will take over operation of the largest privately run prison in the state after more than a decade of mismanagement and other problems at the facility. This just emphasizes the problems, you know, with these privately run companies, private institutions running these prisons. Nashville-based Corrections Corporation of America has contracted with the state to run the prison since it was built in 1997. Taxpayers currently pay CCA $29 million per year to operate the 2,080-bed prison south of Boise. Governor C.L. Butch Otter made the announcement Friday and a preview of the upcoming legislative session. That for years, Otter has been a champion of privatizing certain sectors of government, including prisons. But in 2008, he floated legislation to change state law to allow private companies to build and operate prisons in Idaho and import out-of-state inmates. In 2008, he suggested privatizing the 500-bed state-run Idaho Corrections, Orofino. The CCA prison has been the subject of multiple lawsuits alleging rampant violence, understaffing, gang activity, and contract fraud by CCA. CCA acknowledged last year that falsified staffing reports were given to the state showing thousands of hours were staffed by CCA workers when the positions were actually vacant, and the Idaho State Police is investigating the operation of the facility for possible criminal activity. And a federal judge also has held CCA in contempt of court for failing to abide by the terms of a settlement agreement reached with inmates in a lawsuit claiming high rates of violence and chronic understaffing at the prison. Meanwhile, Idaho prison officials, led by IDOC Director Brent Reink, have lobbied to allow the agency to put together its own proposal and cost analysis for running the prison. Each time, however, Reinke and his staff have been rebutted by the State Board of Correction. But recently, Board Chairman Robin Sandy said he opposed the idea because he didn't want to grow state government. But anyway, they're taking over. So that's good.
Oh, I just wanted to ask you, go down a little bit. London's first pay-per-minute cafe.
What?
What is that exactly?
I don't even know where you are.
Right here.
Oh, I don't know. These are all advertising.
It's a way of making money, I'm sure.
It's paper mill cafe. I don't know. It doesn't matter.
It'll come here.
Little advertisements, and I don't want to get into that. All right. So, anyway.
I was just curious as to what a paper minute
MCT cafe is. We usually try to, let's get off that a little bit. We should try to get into some environmental things and health things.
Yeah, we just have about 10 minutes.
But it turns out MCT fats found in coconut oil boost the brain function in only one dose. I told you we should have gotten some coconut oil the other day. I totally forgot about it when we were down there. But interestingly enough, MCT fats are found in coconut oil. We've got a long way to go for MCT fats. MCTs are not like most fats we consume. For instance, due to their smaller size, they do not form micelles and are not stored in. This is a little too complex. I can't even read it. Sorry, folks. You shouldn't be doing that. But just know that coconut oil is really good for you. Okay? Really good. Yeah, coconut oil. Yum. Yum, yum. We can go out on this one maybe tonight because this is really important and it's been so lost in the news. I mean, real news. I noticed that it's getting pretty serious now because it's getting so close to us. But 36 signs the media is lying to you about how radiation from Fukushima is affecting the West Coast. The West Coast of the United States is being absolutely fried by radiation from the Fukushima nuclear disaster.
Mm.
And the mainstream media is not telling us the truth about it. What you are about to see is a collection of evidence that is quite startling. Taken collectively, this body of evidence shows that the nuclear radiation from Fukushima is affecting sea life in the Pacific Ocean and animal life along the west coast of North America in some extraordinary ways. But the mainstream media continues to insist that we don't have a thing to worry about. And the mainstream media continues to insist that radiation levels in the Pacific and along the West Coast are perfectly safe. Are they lying to us? Well, evaluate the evidence compiled below and come to your own conclusions. Number one, independent researchers have measured alarming high levels of radiation on the beaches of the West Coast. For example, the video posted below was taken on December 23, 2013, at Pacifica State Beach. As you can see in this video, radiation levels near the water are up to 5 times higher than normal activity. God. This is a little, this is 7 minutes, but it just kind of, somebody registering
radiation
levels. And he's walking along, and he's noticing radiation levels changing with his Geiger counter. All right?
Mm.
And kind of interesting to see what happens. And as he gets closer to the water, the radiation levels climb higher and higher and higher on his Geiger counter until he's right at the water site, right at the water's edge, all right? And, there's no sound to it, but you just see how as he gets closer.
It started out like at 32, and now it's 124.
Yeah, 24 on his Geiger counter. And he's only about 20-30 feet from the water,
mm-hmm.
Okay, Pacific Ocean.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. According to Oceanus Magazine, the total amount of cesium-137 that has been released in the Pacific Ocean from Fukushima is 10,000 to 100,000 times greater than the amount released in the oceans by the Chernobyl disaster or by the atmospheric nuclear weapons test of the 1960s. Former MSNBC host Cenk Uygur has admitted that while he was at MSNBC, he was instructed not to warn the public about the radiation coming from Fukushima. He says, "I was on MSNBC at the time when this happened. I said, don't trust what the Japanese government is saying. They'll say, trust what the electric power is saying. Go, get out of there, okay, and get as far away from the plant as you can. It's literally a core meltdown, and they always don't want people to panic. So they were always like, oh, it's going to be okay. I'm like, you're crazy, man. Don't be anywhere near that reactor. And I remember at the time, of course, not at the Young Turks, but on cable news, people were like, hey, Sank, you know, I don't know what you want to say that. I don't know you want to say that because the official government position is that it's safe. Oh, is that the government position? No. Go explain that to the people who served on the USS Ronald Reagan. You know, was right outside of Fukushima. And 71 U.S. sailors who assisted with the initial Fukushima relief efforts have developed serious diseases such as testicular cancer, thyroid cancer, leukemia, unremitting gynecological bleeding, and brain tumors since that time, as a result of exposure to radiation coming from Fukushima. And something, number five...
You never hear anything about that.
No, you never hear anything. It is something is causing starfish all along the west coast of the United States to literally disintegrate into piles of white goo. Researchers saw nuclear pollution from 2011 earthquake in Japan that damaged the Fukushima nuclear power plant could be partially to blame for a disease wiping out starfish along the West Coast. Dr. Peter Raimondi of the University of Santa Cruz says something is making starfish susceptible to what's believed to be a bacteria coined wasting disease. It essentially disintegrates the marine invertebrates into a white goo after the starfish loses its legs.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And six, bald eagles are dying in unprecedented numbers in Utah, and nobody can figure out why this is happening. Bald eagles are dying in Utah, 20 in the past few weeks alone, and nobody can figure out why. Hundreds of the majestic birds, many with wingspans of 7 feet or more, migrate here each winter, gathering along the Great Salt Lake and feasting on carp and other fish that swim in the nearby freshwater bays. Earlier this month, however, hunters and farmers along five counties in northern and central Utah began finding the normally skittish raptors lying listlessly on the ground, many suffering from seizures, head tremors, and paralysis in the legs, feet, and wings. Imagine that, huh? Huge numbers of dead birds are dropping dead and washing up along the coastlines of Alaska. It is being reported that many of the carcasses of the dead birds are broken open and bleeding.
Oh.
Number eight, the recent deaths of thousands of birds in Oregon is absolutely baffling scientists. Nine, something is causing large numbers of seals and walruses up in Alaska to lose hair and develop oozing sores.
Oh.
Ten, substantial numbers of polar bears along the coast of Alaska are suffering from fur loss and open sores. 11, there is an epidemic of sea lion deaths along the California coastline. 12, the population of sockeye salmon along the coastline of Alaska is at a historic low.
Yeah, there's none.
And dangerous, something is causing Pacific herring to bleed from their gills, bellies, and eyeballs. 14, dangerous levels of cesium-137 have been discovered in mushrooms and berries grown along the West Coast. According to an absolutely shocking report put out by the National Academy of Sciences, it has been proven that Pacific bluefin tuna have transported radioactive material across the entire Pacific Ocean. We report unequivocal evidence that Pacific bluefin tuna, Athunus orientalis, transported Fukushima-derived radionuclides across the entire North Pacific Ocean. 16. Something seems to be causing a substantial spike in the death rate of killer whales living off the coast of British Columbia. Experts have found very high levels of cesium-137 and plankton living in the waters of the Pacific Ocean between Hawaii
and
the West Coast. They're killer whales are more. Whales eat plankton. Killer whales are.
Other whales, other mammals.
Fish, they're more. One test in California found that 15 out of 15 bluefin tunas were contaminated with radiation from Fukushima. 19. Back in 2012, the Vancouver Sun reported that cesium-137 was being found in very high percentage of fish that Japan was selling to Canada. 73% of the mackerel, 91% of the halibut, 92% of the sardines, 93% of the tuna and eel, 94% of the cod and anchovies, and 100% of the carp, seaweed, shark, and monkfish. 20. An EU-funded study concluded that Fukushima released up to 210 quadrillion becquerels of cesium-137 in the atmosphere. 21. One very experienced Australian adventurer has stated that he felt as though the ocean itself was dead as he journeyed from Japan to San Francisco recently. Next leg of the long voyage was from Osaka to San Francisco, and for most of that trip, the desolation was tinged with nauseous horror as a degree of fear. After we left Japan, it felt as if the ocean itself was dead, I said, and he hardly saw any living things. We saw one whale sort of rolling helplessly on the surface with what looked like a big tumor on his head.
Oh.
It was pretty sickening. And I've been a lot of miles on the ocean in my life, and I used to see
turtles,
dolphins, sharks, and big flurries of feeding birds. But this time, for 3,000 nautical miles, there was nothing alive to be seen.
Oh, my God.
In place of the missing life was garbage in astounding volumes. He says part of it was the aftermath of the tsunami that hit Japan a couple of years ago. He said a wave came in over the land, picked up the unbelievable load of stuff and carried it out to sea. And it's still out there everywhere you look. And 22, he said it is being projected that the radioactivity of coastal waters off the U.S. West Coast could double over the next 5 to 6 years. My God. And you know, the deputy chairman of Russia's State Duma Committee for Natural Resources, Maxim Shingarkin, said that the seafood captured off the northwest coast of the United States is so radioactive that it represents a danger to mankind. Currents in the food in the world ocean are so structured that the areas of seafood captured near the U.S. Northwest coast are more likely to contain radioactive nuclei than even the Sea of Okhotsk, whatever, and which is much closer to Japan. These products are the main danger for mankind because they can find their way to people's tables on a massive scale. And according to one recent scientific report, radiation from Fukushima could affect our seafood for many generations and ultimately kill more than 1 million people. The Japanese...
This goes on.
Yeah,
it's
36,
already 9 o'clock.
Well, the Japanese government has estimated that approximately 300 tons of highly radioactive waste is pouring into the Pacific Ocean and destroyed Fukushima nuclear facility every single day. God. A senior researcher of marine chemistry of the Japanese Meteorological Agency says that the 30 billion becquerels of radioactive cesium and 30 billion becquerels of radioactive strontium are being released into the Pacific Ocean from Fukushima every single day. Oh, my God.
According to TEPCO, a total of somewhere between 20 trillion and 40 trillion becquerels of radioactive tritium have gotten into the Pacific Ocean since the Fukushima disaster. According to a professor at Tokyo University, 3 gigabecquerels of cesium-137 are flowing into the port at Fukushima Daiichi every single day. It is being projected that significant levels of cesium-137 will reach every corner of the Pacific Ocean by the year 2020. It has been estimated that the entire Pacific Ocean will soon have cesium levels 5 to 10 times higher.
They're all dying. It's killing the entire Pacific Ocean.
Yep.
It has been estimated the entire Pacific Ocean will soon,
like a dead zone.
The immense amount of radioactive material being released in the Pacific Ocean from Fukushima has caused environmental activist Joe Martino to issue the following alarm. Your days of eating Pacific Ocean fish are over. And the iodine, strontium 90 that are constantly being released from Fukushima are going to affect the health of those living in the northern hemisphere for a very long time. And he says, just consider that Harvey Wasserman had to say about this. Iodine-131, for example, could be ingested into the thyroid where it emits beta particles or electrons that damage tissue. A plague of damaged tissues has already been reported among as many as 40% of the children in the Fukushima area. The percentage can only go higher. In developing youngsters, it can stunt both physical and mental growth. Among adults, it causes a wide range of ancillary ailments, including cancer. Cesium-137 from Fukushima has been found in fish caught all as far as...
California.
Yeah. It spreads throughout the body, but tends to accumulate in the muscles. Strontium 90 half-life is about 29 years. It mimics calcium and goes to our bones. And outdoor radiation levels at Fukushima recently hit a new all-time high. According to Wall Street Journal, is being projected that the cleanup of Fukushima could take up to 40 years to complete. Yale University professor Charles Perro is warning that if the cleanup of Fukushima is not handled with 100% precision, humanity could be threatened for thousands of years.
There are very alarming reports that the new unexplained plumes of radioactive steam are rising at Fukushima. Japanese officials are not able to get inside and see what is causing the plumes. Some are speculating that the crisis at Fukushima just got a whole lot worse.
The following, and it goes on. And it talks about it, the horrible thing. So, folks, we're doomed, man. I hate to say this, but we're pretty much doomed, as a society and as a world.
Unless we can clean that up.
The West Coast is dead, and it's terrible. But
I think it's fitting that Obama bought property in Hawaii.
I do, too. I think it's only right that he should buy a $40 million place in
Hawaii, close to the radioactive.
Right on the radioactive crap. It's so good. Well, just end on one positive note. Rodman. Kim Jong-un is trying to change North Korea in a great way. The from Facebook. It said, like if you think Rodman should consider relocating to North Korea. Yes, I agreed with that. Totally.
That he should go to North Korea?
Complete moron. But anyway.
Well, thanks for being with us, folks.
Thank you so much, folks.
And tune in tomorrow night. Yeah. You can listen to Leo or
not.